Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB, where sometimes I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah. Whatever. Stephen St. John here with Nate Bucati and Jake Gutierrez, now joined by Tim Grunhardt and Timmy. The segment, one of the great partners of the radio station, bring this segment to our listeners today, brought to you by CBD American Shaman. How about this, Timmy? They are handing out free cans of their ice-cold CBD-infused carbonated coconut and watermelon drinks at all of their CBD American Shaman locations. Be sure to mention Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's a great time to try one of these powerfully relaxing drinks for free. Coconut, watermelon, lime, grapefruit. The taste is delicious. A great summer drink you can drink alone or mix with your favorite beverage. CBD American Shaman, when the summertime heat has you beat, just remember, life is better with the feather. I drink one every day during the show, and it calms my nerves, Tim Grunhardt.
Yes, it does. And remember, it's not just a can. It's a four-pack. So you walk in, you say,
thank you.
Hey, I heard Stephen St. John and Grunny on 810 this morning. How about a free four-pack of some great CBD-infused sparkling waters? And guess what? They're yours. Free. So stop in. I last night, with the storms, and, little Sammy the dog, he's not really fond of storms. He doesn't like rain. He certainly doesn't like thunder. So I was debating whether to give him some of the CBD night, but I decided to take it. So I took some CBD night last night and slept like a baby. Woke up this morning, no hangover. You know, when you take the Tylenol PMs or any of that stuff over the counter, or, even the prescription stuff, you always wake up, you're like, oh, my God, what did I do? Not with CBD night. So, yeah, when you stop in, get a four-pack and pop a top, and you can put some great adult beverages in those mixers, which is a nice touch. And a little CBD night would be good for you to get a little sleep. So, CBD, but life is better with the feather, right?
That's exactly right. And, they do have items. They do have products for your for Sammy, for your dogs to calm Sammy's nerves. So I don't know if
we had it, but it was like 1 o'clock in the morning, and I was like, I'm gonna take care of my, I'm gonna take care of me's, not he's, and I took care of myself. I went and got some CBD night. Slugged it down and went to sleep and said, good luck, Sammy.
And here you are, fresh and ready to attack the day. Let's talk some football with us. And we've got a couple of clips that at some point we could play from Andy Reid and his appearance on ESPN yesterday. And so we will hear from Big Red, the coach who made his appearance yesterday. Where was what show was he on? He was
Scott Van Pelt.
Scott Van Pelt, SVP, and so we'll hear from Andy Reid a little bit later on. But talking about the NFL right now, Timmy, and college football, I know that's kind of looking past what we're focused on—baseball, and soccer, and basketball right now. But do you feel any more confident, less confident, since we've last talked about college football and what you've heard, and also the NFL and what you've heard as we get, we're almost in June, so pretty soon we're going to be talking about the time where training camp normally takes place.
Well, I don't want to say I feel more confident, but I still feel confident that college football and the NFL is going to kick off. I'm very, very confident that they're going to kick off. Now, whether there'll be a limited number of fans in the stands or half or all really comes down to kind of the numbers and everything that kind of happens in the next couple months. And listen, if you can have a huge party at the Lake of the Ozarks in a pool do that whole deal, then I guess you could put some people in the stands. But listen, it's something that's very serious, and, we've all got to still respect this whole pandemic and the virus that's going on. But, we need to realize that our actions and consequences are going to, either limit us or they're going to add to our enjoyment later on. And we miss sports. I miss sports. One of the things that I love to do is sit out on my porch and watch Cub games and Royals games, and I miss that immensely. And, you know, the Korean games, they did it. It was like, you know, it's a little fix, but I'm kind of tired of those games now. So I want American baseball back, and I want American football and college football. And so all indications are that July 1st, a lot of the colleges will be kicking into a limited kind of off-season program in the summer. And then most of the programs will start on time, and it just depends on, you know, what happens in our society with all the different numbers and all the different social distancing and people kind of respecting the whole program, whether we'll have a lot of fans in the stands or not. And then, you know, of course, the scientists are going to have to help us out too, and I think they're doing a wonderful job trying to find you know, different solutions for the pandemic as far as treatments and vaccines and all those kind of things. So hopefully that stuff will kick in too. You know, I believe in America. I believe in our scientists. I believe in, you know, the private sector is going to solve this problem for us. And when they do that, I think, you know, we'll obviously never be the same, but we will have a new normal, but it'll be new and it'll be normal, and we'll be able to hopefully get some things done. And, you know, it's kind of funny that when you brought up Andy Reid, I listened to his press conference last Friday, and one of the things I took from it is, and this is what really made me smile, and I think that it would make everybody else smile, is that their installs that they have been doing, they're right on the same path that they would be on if they were in the facility. So they're putting in the same, they're putting the pressure on their coaches, they're putting the pressure on their players to learn virtually. Now, these kids learn a lot better than we would, Stephen, as you know, and Nate and Jake, because, you know, they're kind of used to this virtual stuff, especially the young guys. I mean, listen, they took a semester of classes basically with the virtual learning. I have talked to a couple coaches, and it's really been hard on them because, you know, a lot of the stuff that they're asked to do, they're not used to doing, because a lot of the techniques and a lot of the different programs that they are running are new to them. So you know, to have a five-hour class, if you're a rookie, you're there basically for 5 hours every day doing install. That's hard on the coaches because, you know, you have to be able to manipulate and use that equipment that they've been asked to use. So, but the Chiefs have done a really good job of it, and they're putting in, they started out by putting in two plays. Everybody's like, well, two plays, that's not much. Well, you got to remember, two plays, you know, let's say you're putting in the inside and outside zone play, inside zone and outside stretch. You know, those plays equate into all kinds of different things, with 4-3, 4-4, 4-2, 4-1 defense, and you go to 34, 33, and then you go to all the shades. So that one play or two plays can equal 16, 17, 18, 19 different combinations. So it does take a long time to put those things in. So I think the Chiefs do a really nice job right now of staying on track, and that's a positive.
Hey, Timmy, before we move on and talk more about the Chiefs, I saw Patrick Surtain, the former Chiefs corner, being asked about his son, who's a fantastic corner in college right now, about how he has any reservations about his son playing college football this year, with all, you know, uncertainty and you know, however you want to describe it. And so take off all your other hats, because you wear too many damn hats, and just talk to me as daddy, as Big Daddy Tim what? Grunhard, and how you feel about just your son going back. Do you have any reservations, or maybe any concerns that are more than others about your boy going back and playing at Notre Dame in this situation?
Well, I don't. And the reason why I don't is because I believe that the place that I sent my son and I sent my daughters and the place that I went to, I think that they're going to care more for the student than the athletes. I think they're going to take care of the kids. I think they're going to do all the right things. They're going to make all the right adjustments. And if I don't believe that, then I send my son or my daughter to the wrong place. So I believe that the administration, I believe that the coaches, I believe that the people in the front office of the athletic department are going to care more about my son than they're going to care about, you know, the sport or the games that are going to be played. And if I don't believe that, then you know, and I've sent my son or my daughter to the wrong place. So I think, and you know, I actually have talked to the offensive line coach. Our buddy John Ault, his son, was just offered a scholarship to Notre Dame. So I had a little quick visit with the offensive line coach at Notre Dame. He asked me about John and the family and all the good stuff there. And you know, asked me, hey, you know, would you feel comfortable giving John a call and telling him how great our program is? So I said, absolutely will. So I called John up, and you know, that was one of the questions that he asked me. John said, hey, listen, you know, do they care about the student, and do they care about taking care of the player first? And they do. So they do. So that's very important to me. I think it's very important to recruits. I think it's very important to everybody who is involved in student athletes right now, because if you don't trust the place that you sent your kid to take care of them and make all the right adjustments, then you know what, then you didn't send them to the right place.
So that is really, I think, interesting perspective, Grunny. And obviously, we know your love of Notre Dame. We talked to Bees about what a special place Notre Dame is and all that. I think that we could also agree that not every school is the same when it comes to those things. One thing I saw brought up is we're talking about Major League Baseball Players Association, NBA Players Association, NHL Players Association, MLS Players Association. Hadn't gotten there yet with the NFL, but when they start to decide how they're going to return, the Players Association will have some sort of say in it. And all those different associations have gotten together and said, okay, these are the concerns we have as players. We want to know how you're going to address testing and safety protocols and measures before we sign on for this. But if you're a student athlete, you don't have a union like that. Like you basically are just, you're just kind of left to hoping and trusting that the school and the coach you play for is going to do what's right for you. I mean, how do college athletes, and especially maybe ones that don't have parents that look out for them the way that maybe you have for your kids, that are just kind of left to their own devices to go to school, how do they make sure that they're getting the proper safety and all those types of things when they get back to playing?
You know, that's a good question, and I think that you can't answer that question if you, you know, I haven't been put in that situation. So, but I do think that it's so important to be able to trust the coaches. Now, when I say trust the coaches, I'm talking about when it's 110 degrees out in the summer and they're out, you know, running in the heat, whether they cancel it or make sure that they're pushing water or they're making good decisions. I'm also talking about, you know, if there's a concussion protocol that's going on, whether they skip a couple steps to get a player back onto the field. You know, I'm also talking about that, you know, academically, if somebody's struggling, that, you know, hey, listen, you could take a practice off, or you can, you know, make sure that you have the proper help to get your work done in order to have success in the classroom. So there is different parameters that you can check and look at. And if they have been doing those kind of things, and most of the universities are great, and, you know, they understand that, you know, they are going to be judged on how they take care of their student-athlete when it comes to health, when it comes to academics, and when it comes to, obviously, sports. But it's so important to be able to look at those factors and say, okay, when my son had a concussion, what kind of protocol did he go through? Did they check all the boxes? Did they do everything they possibly could in order to give him an opportunity to get back on the field healthy? You know, when he's struggling with his microbiology class, did they give him a tutor to go ahead and say, hey, listen, you know, if you're struggling with that, you know, take the practice off and go do this or that? Because those are the kind of indicators that said, well, then they're going to make the right decisions when it comes to this pandemic. And what I think they're going to do is they're going to do some massive testing. They're going to also, and here's the thing, and this falls back on the student athlete. This is the only thing that concerns me when it comes to the players going back, is that if you have any symptoms, you've got to be honest with yourself, and you got to be honest with your teammates, and you got to be honest with your coaches. You can't just blow it off. If you have a cough, or you have a runny nose, or you have a sore throat, or you have any indication, you've got to be completely honest. Because if you're not, it doesn't matter what the coaches do. So really, personal responsibility and taking care of yourself and your people next to you and everybody else in that room is what is going to come down to. And now you got to look at the character of the people that you're recruiting, the character of the people that are in that room, the character of the people that you recruited, and those are the people you got to trust. So that's what concerns me. When it comes to Notre Dame, I'm saying that because that's what I know. I'm sure that KU has, and I know that KU has a lot of people like that, and I know that Missouri has a lot of people like that. But you've got to be able to trust those people, because if they're going to lie and they're going to come in and say, listen, I have a sore throat, but I'm not going to say anything because I don't want to lose my spot, then all this goes to crap.
We have Tim Grunhard on the line, and so I've said oftentimes on the show that I get very confused and unsure when my fifth grade girls come to me with questions about their math homework. So I'm curious, what do you say when your son calls you up for some help from dear old dad with microbiology? Are you do you have all the answers ready, or how do you handle it?
I say ask your mother.
Because you don't want to show off, and you don't want to do the work for him. If he doesn't do it on his own, he doesn't learn. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. You have to. You got to learn on your own. You got. You know. You got to get outside of your comfort zone and go ahead and do your own work. But they passed me up, Stephen. To be brutally honest with you, about seventh or eighth grade, I was done with all that stuff. Now I could help you write a paper. I can help you with other things as far as, you know, I was a political science major, government, that kind of stuff. I can help you with that, but forget about math. Forget about all that science stuff. There's no way I could. I think seventh grade they passed me up.
So I shouldn't be offended.
No, don't be offended.
I was very happy, and Phil was preparing for his AP English exam last week. And, you know, I feel like, hey, I'm an English major. I can go in there and, hey, Phil, what help do you need?
I'm good, Dad. No thanks.
So that shouldn't offend me at every level, because it did.
And Nate, right now they're sitting at the table, and you can help them out with their homework and wait till they get to about eighth grade or freshman year in high school, and you can't believe all the stuff you forgot.
Trust me, I'm struggling to teach math to my second grade daughter sometimes because they do it completely differently than we did. I don't understand. Like, I've had to Google some terms that that did not exist when we were studying math at that time. So, yeah, luckily my wife is really good at math and science, so she's able to help the kids with that stuff because I'm not.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And you know, it's further when you go to a university and you bring your student in. I don't care if it's an athlete or whatever it is. You're going to look at the programs and see, hey, listen, because they're all going to need help. You know, I have really, really good students. I've been blessed. But you know what? They all have used tutors. They all have you know, gone to study classes. They've all done those kind of things, and you have to do that. So, you know, those are the kind of programs that you have to trust that the university has, and it really comes back to trust. And, you know, most universities are going to give your son or daughter the best opportunity to have success both on and off the field, and that's what you have to believe and you got to trust. But, you know, there's also the universities that, listen, the bottom line is more important, and they, you know, we want to get you in and get you out. We want to use you for your talents, and we're not too particularly worried about, you know, whether you graduate or particularly worried about what you've learned, but we want to use you as a commodity. And that's just the way it is. That's the way life is. But you know what? You know, and let's face it, you know what schools those are. And a lot of people, that's what they want to do. And I have no problem with that. You know, you look at college basketball. You know, people go to University of Kansas for basketball for 1 year. They want to get a great experience. They want to go play in an awesome place, but they want to go on. They're not particularly worried about their education. And then, you know, you have football programs that are the same way, where, you know, you're there, you're going to learn, you're going to be gone in 3 years and go from there. So, you know, you make those decisions, and you just got to trust that you're making the right decision.
We've got Tim Grunhard on the line. When we come back, we're going to talk about a beautiful black and white photo that Timmy tweeted out, that I've retweeted, of the 1990 Chiefs draft class, which features Tim Grunhard in a very smart-looking long-sleeve polo, sitting next to Dave Zott, who looks like he'd rather be anyplace else in the world, and Percy Snow not looking at the camera. So we'll talk about that after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol or Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John, Nick Yucatey, Jake Gutierrez, and Tim Grunhard. Promise you a couple of short clips from Andy Reid on with Scott Van Pelt. As Nate tells me, they call him SVP.
That's right.
Nate also calls me SSJ.
That's right.
And sometimes we call Nate SOB.
That's
very different. And so, Timmy, let me play a couple of clips for you from Andy Reid and just get your comments on those.
Sure.
The first one is just a short clip. He was asked about first-year head coaches and how difficult this situation is for them to deal with.
I feel bad for the teams that are new, these guys that are coming in the league that are great football coaches and getting to work with these great players. Don't have that opportunity to get on the field.
And he also talked about the Chiefs enjoying tremendous continuity with not only their roster, but their coaching staff.
Yeah, well, first of all, Brett Veach did a phenomenal job of re-signing a bunch of our guys. And so that helps. And then we kept the same coaching staff that we had last year. So there's not a ton of change going on. From that standpoint, it's better than having all new. That's a great challenge. I mean, these guys are great coaches, so they'll rise up to it. And I think the NFL will still be in great hands with a great product.
Now, Timmy, I'm sure people are going to get tired of me saying it, but I'm going to keep talking about it. And I don't care what I don't care what anyone says nationally, because they're just trying to get, they're like clickbait Nate over there, trying to get people to click on their Twitters and tweets and clicks and everything else. We know that about Nate. And so what I'm telling you is, already the Chiefs are the best team in football and the defending champs, with the best quarterback in football and the best talent around him, and one of, if not the best coaches in football, and a hell of a staff that they were able to put together. And so even if they would have had more turnover on their roster and still had Mahomes and Kelce and Hill and Andy Reid and Bieniemy and everything else, to me, they'd be huge favorites to win it again. But then when you factor in everything that's happened and having to deal with really no OTAs, and we don't know what training camp's going to be, and all these big-time quarterbacks moving around, and no continuity, and all these teams dealing with new coaches and everything else, that makes the Chiefs even bigger favorites. And I don't know how you could possibly look at the NFL and look at these teams and not come to the realization that this is going to be the Chiefs' season again. Everything, short of any devastating injuries, but everything's lined up perfectly for the Chiefs to go into the season whenever it's played and just kick ass all the way to Tampa.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point, and Coach Reid is exactly right when he talks about he feels bad and it's going to be really hard for these first-year coaches and first-year coordinators to come in and install and to get to know and build a relationship and the camaraderie with these players that they need to build before they get to training camp. You know, just think about it this way, and, you know, I love to kind of, you know, kind of go behind the scenes a little bit. When I was with the Chiefs, we had Joe Pendry, and then we had Paul Hackett, and then we had Jimmy Ray as coordinators. Jimmy Ray and Paul Hackett spoke the same language because they were on the same staff, but Joe Pendry had a completely different language. So it's like going and, you know, learning a completely new language. Yes, the meanings of the words are the same, but they're different language and there's different ways of saying it. So, you know, it's like, you know, hey, listen, I'm going to go get Babbel, and I'm going to learn French here in the next couple of weeks, and then now I have to go and speak
the
that.
French.
So if you think about it that way, these guys who are learning virtually are not only learning the new plays, but they're learning the new language for those plays. And you know, it's a little bit easier when you're sitting in a comfy chair and you're looking at a computer screen and you think you know it, and then all of a sudden you're out on the field trying to fight for your life and trying to make a football team, and you got to be able to take that knowledge that you learned before and take it onto the field and make adjustments and not hesitate. And I always tell you, hesitation is a killer in the NFL. If you hesitate, you lose. If you hesitate, you get cut. So that's what worries me. Well, it doesn't particularly worry me. I think it's great for the Chiefs, but it worries me because I don't think the product is going to be quite where it needs to be early in the season for a lot of these new coaches, because we don't know when they're going to be back in. They may not be back in. They may not be with their coaches until training camp starts. And when training camp starts, let's just put it this way. And right now, the installation period that's going on with the Chiefs, and I think it probably started in the beginning of May. I'm not exactly sure the whole period of which they've been doing this virtual installation. In 5 or 6 weeks, you're putting in your offense. Okay, so each day you're putting in 2 or 3 plays. You know, 2 or 3 run plays, 2 or 3 pass plays, you know, out of formations, you know, out formation, out slot formation, 3-by-1, 2-by-2, Detroit formation with a tight end, New York with 2 tight ends, all these different things that you're putting in. And you have 5 weeks to do it. Well, guess what? When you get to training camp, it's all put in 5 days. And there's no slowing down because you can't slow down. So, and especially now when they're not going to have as many preseason games and all that kind of stuff, that you got to learn even faster. So they're learning a new language, and they're going to have to get on the field, and they're going to have to, within really 5 or 6 or 7 days, learn a whole new offense, even though they've been exposed to it. It's like going on vacation to France, and you think, well, man, I kind of know what's going on here, and I can speak the language, and I can order, you know, a baguette, or I can order some coffee, or I can sit down and, you know, ask somebody where the bathroom is. But now all of a sudden, you know, five or six weeks later, you have to be able to speak fluently that language. And you got to be able to speak fluently that language so people understand you. And you're able to, you know, go out and take advantage of the information that's been given you. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be really hard. That's why the Chiefs, with 20 or 22 players coming back, have such an advantage, because they're all speaking the same language. So new coaches and new coordinators and all that whole experience is going to be very, very difficult for a lot of these teams that are starting over again.
Ah, the French champagne.
Action, please.
Ah, the French champagne has always been celebrated for its excellence.
Do you know how happy I am when anyone brings up France or the French and we're allowed to play a drunken Orson Welles instead of the commercial? So, thank you, Timmy. Thank you so much for that.
That's my pleasure.
Hey, Nate, Jake, has anyone had a chance to look at this beautiful black and white photo that I retweeted from Timmy?
Yes, I did. I like that polo shirt you're wearing there, Grunny.
Real good. You're ready to tackle life, Timmy. You look great.
Why were they? Why are you all? Yeah, like was the picture taken from up above? Like you're all like looking over.
Yeah, I love it.
I have no idea when or where that picture was taken.
Why didn't anyone tell Percy Snow where the camera was? By the way,
it's like it was taken in a third grade classroom.
All I know is my favorite tweet. Somebody tweeted out they found Waldo. I thought that was pretty good.
If you look at that,
you have Derek Graham. These are guys that I can recognize. You have Derek Graham. You got Percy Snow. You got Derek Walker. Me. You got Dave Zott. You got Freddie Jones. You got Ken Hackamack and Tom Sims. I think there's one guy from Syracuse, and I can't remember his name, who was sitting basically right in front of Freddie Jones.
Michael Owens.
There you go. I have no idea who the fresh-looking white dude in the middle is. He must be some quarterback that we signed just for the class. I'm not sure. I don't know who that is.
It's like he went to San Jose State.
Yeah, I noticed that too. But I have no idea who that is. But Ken Hackamack, the guy behind me, kind of not Tom Sims, who's right behind me, the guy behind Zotter. Ken Hackamack was my roommate in the summer, and he was the biggest man I've ever seen. He was about 6'9", about 295 pounds, defensive tackle, who was ripped. I'm talking ripped, but he just played so high, he had no chance. He just got destroyed when he was in there. And then Tommy Sims, remember, he played for the Chiefs for a while and then left and then came back, and then he coached at KU and then continued to coach some different places. Freddie Jones, not sure where Freddie's at, but Freddie's a great guy. I love Freddie. Zotter, talk to Zotter all the time. He's doing stuff with the Jets. D-Walk, talk to him every once in a while. Usually when we play Michigan, he gives me a ring. Percy, I haven't talked to Percy. I think he's probably chasing people around Lakewood still for hitting his house with golf balls. Derek Graham. Talk to Derek when he comes into town for the alumni deal. So Derek's doing good, and Derek was a good player. Just wasn't quite good enough to stay. I think he played a 4 or 5 years, which is a good career. So yeah, those were some good guys, and it was fun. And Zotter and I obviously became best friends and hung out a lot. And played against Percy all 4 years in college. Percy was one of the best linebackers I ever played against. He was strong, tough, and too bad that he had that injury that kind of sidelined his career.
The gentleman, I believe, from San Jose State was a wide receiver, Tony Jeffrey, the 12th round pick. And so that the order of that draft, 12 rounds, boy, Jake, wouldn't you love to have 12 rounds of draft?
Yeah, Tony Jeffrey was the 14th pick in the 12th round out of San Jose State.
All right.
Number 318 overall, Timmy. And so you had first round was Percy Snow, second round you, then fourth round Fred Jones, then Derek Graham, Hackamack, Sims, Zott in the seventh round.
Steal.
Pick. What a steal of the draft besides Timmy. Michael Owens in the ninth, Craig Hudson in the 10th, and Ernest Thompson in the 11th before Tony Jeffrey.
Yeah, Ernest Thompson is in the front row right next to Derek Graham. That's Ernest Thompson. He was a running back, right?
Yes.
Yep.
And, of course, you mentioned Fred Jones. My favorite memory of Fred Jones was the wild card game at Arrowhead Stadium, December 28, 1991, won by the Chiefs 10-6. And you guys jumped out to a 7-0 lead, a 11-yard touchdown pass from Steve DeBerg to Fred Jones that was, the only touchdown of the game for anyone. And then the Raiders answered with a couple of field goals. It's a 7-6 game before Nick Lowry put it away with an 18-yard field goal in the fourth quarter. And what I remember about that game, remember, the Chiefs had not won a playoff game in a long, long time. I was there. I was in line, and I'm one of the first people in the stadium, and I ran up to the upper level because I wanted to see everything and experience everything, playoffs at Arrowhead. And I remember the first guy on the field way before kickoff was Steve DeBerg, and he was walking around the field with a camcorder, just recording, recording stuff and recording things. And I just thought that was so cool that we were so excited and we were so fired up. And you think back to DeBerg, he was towards the end of his career and he got a second chance at football life with Schottenheimer and the Chiefs. And he was almost like a fan out there on the field a couple of hours before kickoff with his camcorder, just walking around, recording everything and taking in the moment. I always thought that was awesome.
And remember, that camcorder was about the size of the cameras that they use now when they go out and interview people. I mean, it was huge. I'll never forget. It was like Christmas Eve my rookie year, and I didn't get my mom anything for Christmas. So I went over to the Hy-Vee off of 291 and Langsford Road in Elise Summit and bought a camcorder at the Hy-Vee.
Oh.
Think about that. I mean, I have no idea why they had a camcorder there. Second of all, it probably cost about $100 or $200 more than it would have cost in any other electronics store. Electric City. What was that? Wasn't it called like Electric City? Wasn't that
Circuit City. The big plug.
Yeah.
Circuit City or and I know you guys probably don't remember this one, but there was a place called like Treasure Island. I don't know if you remember the old Treasure Island. So it's like another form of the Venture.
Venture.
Kmart. Yeah. So I have a card. That in 1990, I was wearing a fresh gold chain around my neck with my hair slicked back into kind of a a mullet looking do, and it was a card from Venture. I was signing autographs at Venture off of Blue Ridge Road over there in Independence. Very
That's
nice.
Fantastic. I know I'd always be very excited whenever the family would take a trip to Dulgin's to do some shopping. Mm-hmm.
I love the Dulgin's magazine. Yep.
Like it's
Christmas
wonderful.
Time, I'd get a Sharpie out and I'd start circling all the things in the Dulgin's magazine that I wanted for Santa Claus.
Right. Or if we needed to run and get something real quick, my mom, hey, look, we got to run down to Skaggs. Okay, all right, let's go to Skaggs and buy some candy or something. And that turned into Osco eventually. But
yeah, you know, there's nothing wrong with the Sears and Roebuck catalog, and especially, you know, the one section that my mom would always catch me looking at.
Timmy, the bra section.
The delicates. Right?
The delicates. The undies.
Yeah.
He's looking at the undies.
What are you looking at? Nothing. I'm looking for that cool G.I. Joe submarine. That looked like you were looking at the delicates. Don't be looking at the delicates.
Okay. So I think Nate and Jake are probably too young. But maybe, Timmy, you can remember this. And so now this is how – this is somewhat embarrassing, but I love it. And so Father's Day is coming up. And I saw that there's a company that is selling in the box, like you would have bought back in the day, one of my favorite toys of my childhood. And I've already kind of dropped some hints, like, hey, I'd like to have this for Father's Day. Do you remember the little Evel Knievel stunt set with the action figure on the motorcycle, and it came with a ramp? And did you ever have that? Because that was... I broke two or three of them, but that was when I first got that under the tree for Christmas. That was one of the greatest Christmas presents I will ever remember. It's like $50, but you can buy that now. It's supposedly just the same thing as it was that you got in the 70s or whatever when you know we were kids. And so, Timmy, I want that for Father's Day. Am I crazy?
Yeah, you know, there was two different styles. You had the one style where you had the pole starter where you stuck the thing in, pulled it out, and it would get the back wheel spinning. And then vroom, 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 vroom one, where you like kind of hold the wheel on the ground and then let it go, right? So you had the two different styles. I think we had both. I think my brother Danny decided he was going to make Evel Knievel jump over a fiery pit, and that was the end of that. Yeah.
Right. There was always pushing the envelope. Mm-hmm. And that would end up with Evel Knievel's the action figure's demise, but then hopefully, if you were good, you get one of the next holidays.
So or you were lucky enough to get a Stretch Armstrong, and then that was.
Oh, jeez, I used to love Stretch Armstrong, but I'd always rip him open somehow. So.
Yeah, and then of course the Hot Wheels tracks with the little controller that, you know, they would never make the turns. So, but there was so much fun. You know, you'd be zipping around on that little track, and you was just so happy once you got some kind of connectivity and put that little thing on, and it was zipping around, and then it would fly off the turn, and you go get it, you put it back on, and say, I'm going to make it this time, and then you wouldn't. So, and then my first experience there was two experiences with football. I had the Strat-O-Matic football, which was awesome, where, you know, you picked a play, and then the other guy picked a play, and then you spun the little dial, and like it was like 4 yards, minus 4 yards, and if they picked the right defense, and you'd have more of an opportunity to stop them. If you picked the wrong defense, you'd have more opportunity in the little spinner area in order to make the big play. And then electric football was the best, and
of course
the V formation was always unstoppable.
I'm looking at images of that right now because I knew that's what you're going to talk about. The only toy that I would rather have than the Evel Knievel, if it's available, the Steve Austin $60 Million Man action figure, and they had the entire cast. I had the Oscar Goldman. Again, I'm still unsure why I would have an action figure of Oscar Goldman in a suit with a briefcase, but I just sit him down and they'd have conversations. And you know, I was an only child, Timmy, and so I had to create my own entertainment.
G.I. Joe was so cool because you know he had that scruff on his face and he had a fresh haircut and had all the great outfits. And then, of course, you know, you had to have all the little different, you know, the Karate Chop, G.I. Joe, and, you know.
Kung Fu Grip.
Yeah, Kung Fu Grip. Nice stuff. That was good stuff. But, so in 1990, I remember buying that camcorder, and I also remember that Dave Zott and I had a very, very special Christmas in my, I bought a new house out on Lee Summit. I had no furniture, and Dave moved in because he was living in an apartment. I said, hey, can I move over, you know, with me, and he brought his dog. So it was basically Dave and I, a couple beanie bags, and a big screen TV. That's what we had for Christmas. Merry Christmas.
When did you get the horse?
I got the horse later on in February or March of that year. Copper, who is very famous, one of the more famous horses in Kansas City.
Right.
I think you go Mr. Ed, maybe Secretariat, and then, of course, you have Copper. Copper the horse that lived a very, very exciting and basically the life of an offensive lineman as a horse.
How did you get Copper?
We had, our neighbor had a horse farm right behind me, and I just walked over there and said, you got a horse? He goes, yeah. So I bought the horse. I knew nothing about horses. I didn't know, you know, a horse from a goldfish. So, but, you know, he just, you know, so we'd have barn parties at my house, and, you know, of course, we'd be playing cards, drink a beer, and the horse would just kind of walk in and drink some beer with us and play cards and sit down there and hang out. And the horse, basically, there was no, I mean, we had a fence, but I just opened it up. So the next thing you know, the horse would be like walking around in the porch, or like looking at you through the kitchen window. And it was fine. We just let him kind of do his thing.
Did you ever introduce Copper to John Elway when he was in town?
No, because I think you probably would have gave Copper an issue, because John's teeth were much better than Copper's. I never brushed Copper's teeth, which, you know, we actually, you know, speaking of John Ault, I'll never forget, you know, he was over there, and John was a very, very big man. And I said, John, you want to ride the horse? He goes, yeah, I'll ride the horse. So I was going to put the saddle on. He goes, no, I don't need a saddle. And he, like, got on the horse, and this was a big horse. His feet were, like, dragging on the ground, and the horse was, I mean, the horse could barely move with Big John on him. So many, many fun days with Copper the horse.
How did Copper feel with John Ault on him?
You know, Copper had many, many large men ride him, which is not a marker. <I guess, laughs> <would be. laughs> So, I'll take a clip and I'll send you guys some pictures of me and Zotter you know, I think Derek Graham, even who's in the first, who had no idea anything about horses, riding Copper. So, yeah, we had some fun out there on the farm, that's for sure.
Sounds like Copper had a hell of a time with the Chiefs' offensive line. So
yeah,
I'd like to hear more about
that
at a later date.
He was basically, he was kind of our mascot, Copper the horse.
Right. Timmy, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate you taking a walk down memory lane with us.
All right, guys. Have a great, great weekend. Everybody be safe. And if you go to Lake of the Ozarks, make sure a little social separation would be good, but have a good time.
Thank you. That's
what it's all about.
Thank you, Tim Grunhard. Jake, any comments on Copper being used to large men riding him constantly? Is it?
Well, I knew some girls in college that were like that, too.
You know, that's absolutely not what I just asked you, so...
some of the women a lot like horses at Western Illinois.
Wow. I just wasn't looking for that one. Nate, do you think the best part of the show is when Jake makes a comment and plays the laugh track for himself?
Yes. He's got good timing with that.
Right, I like it.
On the flip side, you know, if I make a joke like that, he'll hit the boo track.
Right, you know. Hey. He runs the show, man. He's
That's
pulling
right.
the strings. We're just the puppets. We act accordingly.
That's right.
Thank you. Hey, are we gonna do some bingo at 2 o'clock today,
mm-hmm.
fellas?
Yeah, baby.
For our friends at Tiffany Springs Senior Living.
I don't have any new ukulele songs.
Yes.
I meant to try to practice some new ones, but I don't have any new ones.
You're gonna have to, because they expect. Now there's a level of expectation. Jake, you're in charge of birthdays.
Got it.
Nate, you're in charge of things that happen on this date, and also. A little bit of music, and I will be calling the bingo numbers for our friends at Tiffany Springs Senior Living a little bit later on, and we'll find out we'll find out who the big winner is. I know it's a very heated competition, and we're looking forward to it. So we'll do that later on today. Everyone have a wonderful day right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.